Good morning and welcome back to Corinth in Your Car, the Monday after Easter. We are excited and continuing to celebrate the good news that Jesus is risen, and we hope that you are too. Going to have some fun with a conversation today, sermon recap, check-ins, as always, all the good stuff. So I'm here with Josh and Adam. Tell me about this, guys. How was last week, spring break, for those of you who it applies to, and Easter celebrations, family time, all that sort of stuff?
Spring break means nothing to me anymore.
Correct, because you're...
Like,
what are you, an empty nester or whatever?
Yeah, kind of. And so, I mean, I know it means something to you, Luke, because, like, of the ministry side of things, and Josh, you know, it means something to you because of the kids.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
for me, it's just like it's the first week of April.
There you go.
And that's all it is.
So, week, how was the first week of your April?
Birthday? Yeah, the week before my birthday. I got to play golf, so that was great.
Cool.
Did yard work since, you know, Jen had her gallbladder out. She's still not quite up to doing some of that. So, I got the front yard done. And I didn't die.
There you go.
So that's great progress for an allergy sufferer.
Yeah, that's good. Josh, what about you, man?
Well, yeah, so it is truly spring break for us. Everybody's out. Sasha, too, from her teaching job. And so lots of things happened this week that normally don't. Kids had, you know, friends over or went to friends' house, that kind of thing. Tuesday, we kind of took the day as a family, had an appointment in the morning, and then we ate at a gas station for lunch, Cowboys Barbecue in Covington, if you've never had it.
That's good stuff.
Good stuff. And so if you're down in Covington, get the brisket.
Yeah, it actually has like legit Texas-style
Texas-sliced brisket.
Yeah, it's not just roast beef.
That's what I need.
Yeah.
That's what I need.
It's good stuff. And then after that, we went to the Yellow River. I think it's called Wildlife Sanctuary now. It used to be called the Game Ranch. We did that. And then how else do you cap a day off other than going to get buttered utter yet again as
Absolutely.
A family?
100%.
Five small waffle cones.
So you're a cone guy.
I'm a cone guy.
I'm a cone guy as well.
Nah,
if I get ice cream, it's in a cone.
Just give me the
cup. Also love a soup in a bread bowl. If you can eat that after you're done with it, it's good.
I've never done a soup in a bread bowl.
It's good stuff.
But I feel like chili. It would be kind of gross because it was soggy at the bottom or something.
No, a bread bowl is good.
It's really nice.
I mean, like chili in a bread bowl or something like that. Okay. It's good stuff.
It's
but
not like loaf bread. I mean, they make a bread. It's like sourdough loaf bread bowl.
Sure. So. I like those like taco salads and that giant.
Yeah, the big fried tortilla.
Yeah. Those are good.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So same idea.
Anyway. Good spring break. It was very good.
Good. I'm glad. Of course.
How was yours?
It was good. I've played more disc golf than usual and have enjoyed connecting with some students and some volunteers kind of as they're a little bit slower during the week. Tristan and I hung out last night in lieu of youth group. So today's Thursday. Last night was Wednesday. It was super fun. And then this weekend, of course, on Monday, we'll know theoretically who won the Masters. But
yeah, excited about that. Did you watch
I've already watched a little bit this morning.
Did you watch the par 3 yesterday?
No, I didn't watch the par 3 yesterday.
It was a lot of fun.
So, but I know like as we're recording right now at like 10 a.m. on Thursday, Tiger's about to tee off.
I think he teed off at 10:18 and it's 10:21 right
there you
now.
Go. So I will be turning that on pretty much as soon as we're done recording.
So he's halfway through the first hole.
I am going to fight the urge to watch while we're doing the podcast.
Yeah. There you go. Hey, if you turn it on, just move your computer a little bit so I can see it too.
Everything's muted.
Yeah, it's good. And of course, we're you know, it's so weird. I mean, at this point, if you listen to the podcast, you know that we record on Thursday, but it comes out on Monday. And so it's like tempting to say, we had a great Easter yesterday, but also we haven't had it yet. But we know that it's going to be good, that it's going to be great. And so would love to just ask some questions about Easter. You know, what are you planning on doing on Sunday? Are there any Easter traditions that you do with your current family or that you did growing up? Any Easter memories that strike your mind right now that would be fun to share?
We really didn't have a whole lot of Easter traditions. The only thing I remember growing up was the Easter basket thing, mom hiding.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, somebody hiding candy in the house.
Right.
If
kids are listening.
Yeah, if kids are listening. Somebody hid candy in the house.
Yeah.
But then I grew up in like the, so whenever I was probably, you know, 8, 9, 10, you know, all that kind of stuff, I was like late 80s, early 90s. In the 90s, early 90s in Missouri was just still an extension of the 80s. So,
yeah,
because, you know, things moved a little bit slower out there. But so I just remember the white Don Johnson Miami Vice style jackets and, you know, just getting dressed up, white shoes, all those things, and mom making Andy and I take pictures. And so that's probably my biggest memory. And so, yeah.
Cool. I think we need to find some of those pictures.
Oh, they're around.
Yeah, let's find some of those pictures.
Yeah, we always do a family picture, you know, kind of the what lots of people do. Well, the kids colored eggs this week. They dyed them. And
The
actual eggs and then also plastic ones. My mom sent some Easter candy in the mail because they live in Arizona. So last night we got, a couple days ago, we got a bag from Amazon that was just a bunch of chocolate eggs. So the kids liked eating those.
Were they intact?
They were, yeah.
Good.
So what kind of chocolate eggs? Are you talking about the solid ones, hollow ones?
Just the small, like
the Cadbury ones?
Holding up my fingers right now.
Yeah,
no.
Everybody listening, you can see exactly what Josh is saying.
Not the Cadbury ones. They're smaller. They're just solid milk chocolate balls is what they are, but they're in the shape of eggs.
Shape of eggs, yeah.
So are they Whoppers?
No, they're just solid milk chocolate.
Solid milk chocolate.
That's, yeah. Okay. My mom loves
like a Hershey's
milk.
Kiss, but a little bit smaller and egg shape.
I have an egg shape, yeah.
There we go. We cracked it.
We cracked the code right
We would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for you meddling kids.
So, yeah, that's fun. We're trying something this year with our small group. Tonight, actually, is a Seder meal. We have a long table set up in our basement. There's like 20 seats or something, and it's going to be lots of fun.
So, yeah. Cool. For those listening that heard you say the word Seder and have no idea what that means, what are you talking about?
Yeah, it's a meal with a lot of tradition, like the Passover, and there'll be some readings and stuff just to remind us. The original Israelites, when they were left, when they got brought out of Egypt, would eat the Passover afterwards to commemorate just what God had done. And so there's some readings and scriptures associated with that, the food even associated to remind ourselves of the bigger freedom from sin that Jesus has released us from. So it's not a Jewish Passover. It's a Christian Seder that celebrates Jesus as the Messiah.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. And my responsibility is to bring the taters to the Seder.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. Let's go.
How long have
you
potatoes
been,
later
you
this
come
afternoon.
Up with that
I
now?
Just came up with that, yeah, and I'm excited about it. So Easter was always kind of fun as a kid. I enjoyed the Easter egg hunting at my house on Easter morning until, if you've got, you know, kids listening, until my older brothers were old enough to be the ones to hide the eggs. And then they just turned into some jerks and they like made it impossible. And so, you know, I would spend an hour and a half and I'd only find like 3 of my 10 eggs. And then
older brothers are the best.
Come June or July, you know, I would randomly see one of my eggs. I'm like, oh, there it was, you know. So
did you try the candy still?
Of course, I would still eat the candy, you know, all that sort of stuff.
So did you have anybody in your family that like put like pennies in those little plastic eggs? And
yeah, we did like coins in one of them, like
I always thought that was lame.
And stuff like that.
Like, it's a penny.
Yeah, I got a penny. Caught you a dollar. Yeah. The way it goes. And Starburst jelly beans. I was always hunting for the eggs with the Starburst jelly beans because those were the best.
You said Starburst. I heard Starbucks jelly beans.
Starbucks jelly beans. I bet that's a thing. I bet you could find coffee-flavored or Starbucks-flavored jelly beans. Let's jump into the sermon. Adam, yesterday.
This is an enthralling conversation we're already having. Why should we do that?
I don't know. All right. Talk to us about jelly beans. What's your favorite flavor of jelly bean?
Red.
Okay. Any red. There you go.
Hey, speaking of jelly beans, did you know a koala bear is the size of a jelly bean when it's born?
I did not.
Did not.
There you
Actually,
go.
I think it's just koala.
So what would taste better, a baby koala or black licorice?
Well, I said this the other day because Bean Boozled is a game. And so when my son, Dominic, said, yeah, koalas are the size of a jelly bean, I was like, hey, Bean Boozled should make a koala flavor.
Yeah, it'd still be better than black licorice.
All right.
Oh, I like black licorice.
We talked about jelly beans. There's another type of beans called jumping beans, and we're going to jump into the sermon recap right now. So, Adam, talk to us a little bit about what you shared yesterday.
Yeah, I think technically we could say that this was the conclusion to the Healer series.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So technically it's part 6, but it's a kind of a different approach because, you know, the first 5 weeks, obviously we're dealing with things where Jesus said yes to them and you know, did perform a miracle for them. But in this one, I guess there's still the miracle of the resurrection, but the way we got there was through the surrender of Jesus and actually taking no as an answer from his own father.
Yeah.
And so so really we were talking about just this idea that the real way to faith and the real way to life is this place to where we give up control and we surrender to what God wants for us, and we choose, as our Savior did, to surrender to our Father. And so that's where we were yesterday.
Love it. Yeah. Josh, as you're thinking through it and reading through it, what struck you as insightful, challenging, helpful?
I think the number three, when Adam pointed that out again, just how Jesus asked, not once, not twice, but three times. And three times, you know, he surrendered.
Mm-hmm.
Three times. I mean, I guess you could say, in a sense, our salvation hung in the balance, kind of. You know, Jesus was, he was struggling. Luke says he was sweating drops of blood. It was agony.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, three times. And it was just an encouragement to me that Jesus did that. So I think what I walked away from is just kind of two things. Just a huge encouragement, reminder of what Jesus has done, that he surrendered, but then also like him to surrender like he did. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
just an overwhelming gratitude for what Jesus did, but also a challenge to live like that.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I think gratitude is the word for me too, just to think about, the weight of that moment in the garden. We spent time in the narrative of Matthew. I am very familiar with Mark's telling of the story because that's the class I took in Bible college. I did a creative project on Mark chapter 14, verses 32 through 42, which is this story.
Okay.
And the way that Mark kind of structures his gospel is in two sections. Like the first eight chapters are really just him trying to prove to his audience through the stories that Jesus is the Messiah, like Jesus is the Christ. And so as soon as chapter 8 comes along and Peter confesses Jesus as Christ, his like purpose in writing shifts to try to get to the cross as soon as possible. And that's where you see Mark use the word immediately, immediately, immediately over and over again. And so from like chapter 8 all the way to chapter 15, where you finally get to kind of the narrative of the crucifixion, like he's just trying to get us there as fast as possible. But then you get to that moment in the garden and you know, you start to, like, it's the only point in the Gospel of Mark where you actually have to put a question mark and be like, is this actually going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is he actually going to go? And so just to feel the weight of that moment and then to look and see Jesus out of his love and grace for us and out of his trust for, trust in the Father, just to say, yeah, yet what you want, that's what I'll do. And so just love the story. Thought that the words about surrendering were super good, and just, yeah, this is one of my favorite stories in all of the Bible. So let's talk through this. Josh, why don't you do this? Give a quick recap of the story of Garden of Gethsemane, and then Adam, we'll just kind of ask that question that we have been asking a few times recently, just about anything hitting the cutting room floor that didn't make into the sermon that was fun or might be interesting.
Yeah.
So Josh, tell us a story.
Once upon a time. No, this really happened. Not a fairy tale, but it's after Jesus had celebrated the Passover meal with his disciples, and he goes out, and it's night, and he goes to Gethsemane, which is a garden he went to a lot to pray. That's why Judas would later know where to find him to betray him. And he goes to pray, knowing what's coming up. In the timeline, it would be Thursday night, and he would have been crucified Friday morning. And so this is it. He knows it's only hours away. The Bible says he came for this purpose. He knew it. And earlier he had even set his face resolutely to Jerusalem to go there and do it. So he knows that the moment is imminent. And he, like you said, we're left wondering, is he going to get there? And he prays like he always does at big moments. And as he does, he surrenders three times. He brings some disciples with him. they end up falling asleep.
Yeah.
At his most critical hour, they fall asleep on him, and he comes back and says, couldn't you even stay awake? And yeah, it's just a very powerful moment, a revealing moment of Jesus's, of course, divinity, but also his humanity.
Yeah, his humanity for sure.
Mm-hmm. And then the story kind of ends with, you know, after the prayers have happened, Judas does come up, and that's when the betrayal happens, and everything just, it does kind of go fast again, like Mark would tell the rest of his story. Just immediately he was taken, immediately the trial, and the rest of the story of crucifixion, and then, of course, resurrection.
Yeah, love it. Cool. Adam, as you're kind of thinking through this narrative of Gethsemane, even kind of talking through some of the crucifixion, resurrection stuff, what were some things that were interesting that you found as you were studying and thinking through it?
Yeah. And as far as like cutting room floor, you know, we're here on Thursday and we've got four services on Sunday.
Yeah.
And so there may be stuff that hits the cutting room floor that I don't even know is going to hit the cutting room floor yet.
That's true.
Because of my timer that'll be in the back of the room there.
That timer, man.
Yeah, that stupid
four
timer.
Services is not three, so the sermon will be a little shorter probably.
Well, maybe. But yeah. There will be urgency to be as close to that timer as I can. So a few things that just kind of, as I was reading through some stuff, so I was reading through a Tim Keller sermon where he was referencing a Jonathan Edwards sermon. So does that make this third-hand sermon information?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the things that Jonathan Edwards, the preacher in the 18th century, pointed out, he pointed out that, you know, there's a lot of stuff in life that we say, I'm going to do it. And then once you do it, you realize it was a lot harder than you thought, mm-hmm. but it's too late to back out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, to put it in a modern sense, it'd be like, so you decide, it's like, oh, we're going to have a baby. And then you have a baby and you go, oh my gosh. This is a whole lot harder than I thought it was going to be.
Hope I kept my receipt.
Yeah, but there is no 90-day back, you know, guarantee on that. And so what Edwards did is he pointed out, he's like, if you say, I'm going to go to the cross and die for the sins of the world, I'm going to take not only the physical suffering, but the spiritual suffering, the eternal punishment that human beings deserve, whenever you get to the point to where you're actually doing that is the... this is more difficult than I thought.
Yeah.
And in the garden, we're beginning to see the reality of this hit Jesus. He's not surprised that he's going to the cross. He's been saying this for a long time, but this is where the weight of the abandonment and the weight of the punishment and all those things are just kind of starting to weigh on him. And that's why he says, I'm about to die, y'all. I mean, this is crushing me. I'm overwhelmed with grief. And so it's not just a head knowledge that he's got. He's now beginning to like actually experience the separation. So it really, the entire salvation process, the sacrifice process has begun here in the garden. Mm-hmm. And so it is a part of all of that. So I thought that was fascinating. Another thing that somebody pointed out, and this may have been Edwards as well, but it said that centuries before, God put Adam in the garden and showed him a tree and said, and told him, hey, you obey me about that tree and you'll live and I'll be with you. Mm-hmm. Adam didn't. Mm-hmm. Centuries later, God puts the second Adam, he puts Jesus in a garden, shows him a tree, only this time it's a cross, and he says, obey me about the tree and you will die. Mm-hmm. You'll be crushed. And I will abandon you. So it's just like it's an interesting, you know, parallel that's right there with him. And then the other thing is, and then I'll shut up, but is that every other person in history has always been told by God, obey me, I'll be with you. You do what I ask, you obey, I'll be your God, I'll be with you, I won't abandon you, I won't forsake you. Only Jesus is told, obey me and you'll be destroyed. Obey me, you will be abandoned. And he chose obedience. He chose to surrender in that. And no one has ever done that in this life.
Yeah.
Ever before.
Man, I love that.
Yeah. So that was some stuff that I know will 99% not be in the message on Sunday.
We'll see.
It's just like, it may end up slipping in there, but
we'll see. Yeah, I love it.
There's cool. also there's also kind of a cool parallel when you think about, I can't remember exactly which gospel writers. I know Matthew tells the story of the temptation of Jesus early on. And so there's just kind of a cool parallel of there's three temptations.
Yeah.
Jesus passes all three of those here in the garden. You know, that was a desert. This is a garden. Mm-hmm. But the same thing is,
well, and
the temptation of Satan trying to cut, like, short circuit the cross.
Is it Luke's account of the temptation to where it says that Satan left until an opportune time?
I'm not sure.
Anyway, one of those guys says that. Mm-hmm. Either Matthew, Mark, or Luke. We can we can say that.
Yeah.
And so here is the opportune time.
Yeah.
This is the temptation.
Yeah.
The final temptation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For
Jesus passes it just like he did the first one.
Yeah.
A couple of things I love about the story too. Again, Matthew's account doesn't use this, but Mark's account and maybe Luke's account too. Just the way that Jesus addresses the Father in the prayer is with a really just intimate, cool word, Abba, Father.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it, Abba is not like a super hard word to say, and so a lot of people have suggested that very well could have been like. Not just Jesus's first words out of his mouth as a baby, but like mm-hmm. every Jewish boy or girl's mm-hmm. first words as they're kind of like, saying dad for the first mm-hmm. time is Abba, mm-hmm. Abba, Abba. So there's just the really just kind of innocent and intimate kind of thing about that word. I just love another thing that I found that was interesting one time in college and I preached, I used this text as a sermon in my homiletics class with Matt Proctor, President Proctor. And the idea of Jesus telling Peter, James, and John to keep watch,
yeah,
just so mm-hmm. it fascinated me. I'm like, what for? Like, what are they watching for?
Mm-hmm.
And I had this theory that I shared, where I was curious, and I'm not 100% sure if this is the real reason, but I was curious to kind of suggest maybe he told his disciples to keep watch in case God had said yes to his prayer. And, like if, hey, can we do this any other way? And God says, yes, then his disciples are watching for Judas and the angry mob and they can let him know in time, hey, Jesus, they're coming and they can escape. And they can get out before the crowd, gets to him. I don't know. It's just a kind of an interesting theory because you really do have the weight of this moment where Jesus is, if the Father's will is anything but the cross because of the pleading, then, I don't know that he does.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, but that's the beauty of the surrender.
Yeah, I think something else that just occurred to me while you were talking about that one, it's not related to it, but I don't know why it caused it to make me remember it,
sure.
was this idea that if God says no to your prayer, then there's something wrong with you. So you've got Jesus here, you've got Paul in 2 Corinthians 12, he pleads three times. I can't remember the story with David, but David even prays a prayer that God. Oh, it was the temple, wasn't it? Anyway,
he wanted to build the temple.
Yeah, he wanted to build it.
No.
Yeah.
And God's like, no. And so I think that's part of the idea here too with the Garden of Gethsemane, is that just because God says no to you doesn't mean there's something wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. So this story reveals really, and this is what we got to talk about yesterday, is we can't always control, although we want to. We want to be in control. We want to control things.
Mm-hmm.
But what we can always do is surrender.
Mm-hmm.
So you talked about kind of at the beginning of your sermon, just this idea of the illusion of control. Mm-hmm. Let's talk through some of the things. What's dangerous about this? Like what's dangerous about the illusion of control, the desire to control, or even having too much control?
So. Of you two, do you guys consider yourself control freaks?
It depends.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess yes. I don't know.
I think so.
Yeah.
In fact, when I feel, I know moments where I feel out of control, like something's just happening at home and I don't have control over it because I'll start like vacuuming and mopping and putting the dishes away and folding, like mm-hmm. anything I can control,
yeah.
I'll
give
do
me,
that.
Give me some
yeah.
order. Yeah.
Yep. Sure. Give me something that I feel like I can contain.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And so I think that I'm the same way.
Yeah.
And I think that the danger is that it is really difficult if you're a control freak to learn the joy of surrender.
Mm-hmm.
It is something that you have to fight. I think that the illusion is dangerous because it causes us to think that we can control these outcomes. We can control people. We can control all these other things. And it's just a recipe for disappointment. Because at the end of the day, there are some things we have control over. You know, we can control how we respond. We can control our actions. We can control, you know, some things like that. But at the end of the day, those are like the only things that we can control. And everything else is not in our hands, which is, at the end of the day, a great thing. Because I would be a terrible, terrible deity. I mean,
I agreed very quick with that.
Yeah.
Because I also believe that about myself.
Yeah. It's like Bruce Almighty, you know, you're watching, you know, through that, and it's just like you think that you could do a better job than God does, and then you like actually start to think about everything that has to stay under his control and everything that he's, you know, orchestrating and allowing and the choices he's making with all the big picture in mind. And it's like, okay, yeah, I'd be terrible at that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wrote something very similar, just the illusion of control. It's dangerous because broken expectations in life are just huge when we expect something and it doesn't go the way we expect. And that's what is ending up happening. If we think we're going to control, our expectations will be broken every time, and we're just going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
And so the more often we can remind ourselves that we're not in control, the better.
Yeah. And disappointment often leads to despair. And I just wanted to say that to get the D's in. Disappointment to despair. I'm on a roll today with these.
That Matt Proctor training is coming out.
I know, it's coming out. Yeah, there you go. Adam, I love that you kind of brought this up yesterday, the idea of moralistic therapeutic deism, this thing that we do whenever we do have the illusion of control, or whenever we're trying to find control, it's easy to turn to this type of thinking, moralistic therapeutic deism.
I think that's 11 syllables.
Yeah, there you go. You just counted.
I did.
You finger counted. It was kind of funny. There's a lot of this in our culture, moralistic therapeutic deism. We're just going to call it MTD from now on, I think, because it's a handful. I want to take some time just to compare that line of thinking, to kind of talk through that and maybe compare it to the actual truth of the gospel, and just the good news that what we believe about God and the grace of him is just a whole lot better than that. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So it's a study. I mean, it's not something that, you know, like the three of us sat around and we came up with. This is something that Christian Smith and the book was called Soul Searching, The Religious and Spiritual Lives of American Teenagers. And I am not 100% sure what year that came out. If somebody wants to look that up while I'm rambling. But so it's just this idea of, this is just kind of what the younger generations just kind of believe about God, is that, I mean, really, we're supposed to be moral. So we're supposed to be good, nice people. Everybody, sure. Everybody wants to be that. Just be nice. Just be nice. That's all I got to do.
Yeah.
As long as I'm nice, then everything's good.
Correct.
2005.
So
almost 20 years old.
Yeah, so it's almost 20 years old, so that means if he's studying teenagers at that point...
He's just studying Josh.
So we're talking probably people in their mid-30s down.
Yeah, parents.
Who are now parents, who are now raising moralistic therapeutic theists.
Yes.
2005, I would have been 20. So.
Okay, yeah, so... Mm-hmm. And so that... How old were you been... 2005, five?
2005, I was nine.
Nine, okay.
Yep, and watching the San Antonio Spurs win a championship over the Detroit Pistons.
Along with Blue's Clues.
there you go.
So the moralistic is just that the whole purpose of having faith is, I just want to be a nice person. That's it. Therapeutic is that what I get from faith, it's just supposed to make my life better. That's the bottom line. And then the deist part is just the idea that God created the world. He's not really involved. He just kind of set it off to the side. And if you really need him, he can maybe get involved. But for the most part, he's just kind of distant. And so the core belief, and this is what we said yesterday, was that it's a mostly uninvolved God exists to make our lives better. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, you get it to where God is a divine butler. That is his job. I'm going to do nice stuff. I'm going to be a good person. I want to feel good about myself. And whenever I need God, I want to be able to ring the bell, tap the button, send the text, and him to jump in and fix my problem. But other than that, I don't need him to tell me how to live. I don't need him to tell me what sacrifice looks like. I don't need any of those kind of things. I just need him to be at my beck and call whenever something bad happens. And I'm just going to go out there and live a nice life. And I want to be a good person. That's all I want to do. Yeah.
And that line of thinking, what it does is it enslaves you to control.
Absolutely.
Right? Like you are now in control more so than is helpful and
so
actually blessing.
There is it's a really, really good book. It's by Sky Jathani. And there's actually a Right Now media study series on it. And the book is just called With.
Okay.
And he talks about there are five basically positions that we go in our relationship with God. So you've got life under God, life over God, life for God, life from God. And then he says really what God's looking is a life with him.
Yeah.
So this one is the life from God position. And in his study, he references moral therapeutic deism.
Okay.
And so he talked about how this is just that posture, and it is just trying to get from him. But what it is, and what he says about all four of those other positions, not the life with, but the other four, is that at its core, religion is always about two things, fear and control.
Mm-hmm.
Is I'm afraid of God, and so how can I get him under control? And so moralistic therapeutic deism, that's what it is. It's how do I control all the things that are going on? Whenever something happens that's out of my control, that's whenever I need God in there. And it keeps God enslaved to us, but it also keeps us enslaved because the problem with it all is if God's goal for my life is just for me to have a happy, well-meaning, better life and no trouble in life, well, that's not going to happen.
Right.
In this world, you will have trouble. I mean, I read that somewhere.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it's like a guarantee there are going to be difficult things in life. And so it's a system that can't sustain itself because it means, either God's not really good, he's not really involved, or God let me down, or I messed something up. And so it's an enslavement that is there. Because we're still the ones trying to hold on to control.
Yeah. Yeah. Josh, what do you think in kind of regards to that conversation, but also maybe give us some just encouragement and some insights into just why what we believe about the gospel is better than that?
Yeah. I mean, I wrote the word control again, like we want control. And I think naturally we want to be able to understand things. It's part of a byproduct of the scientific culture. In which we live for the past half century, especially, that we can put things in a microscope or we can look at them through a telescope or we can have a study and we kind of wrap our minds around things. But God is not that. He's too big. He's too powerful. He's too sovereign. And I found it interesting, the last five stories, Jesus was absolutely like uncontrollable. Is that a word? He was the one in control, but he was so powerful and not able to be controlled. I mean, he had the control over demons and death and disease, and somehow we want to put him under our control, and that won't work. And so I guess the encouragement for the gospel is just that you can loosen up because you don't have the power to rule the universe, and neither does anybody else.
Yeah.
And so it's been phrased, I love this kind of summary of the gospel, that you're too bad that Jesus had to die, but you're at the same time so loved that Jesus was glad to die. And so there is some rest in surrender. You think of Psalm 23, if I have God, I have everything. The Lord is my shepherd. I have all that I need.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I have God, I have everything. So the release of the gospel, as some writers would say, Jesus's easy yoke, come to me, you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Like, there's still work to do, but Jesus has done the work. And so, for our salvation, at least. And so, there's incredible freedom in surrender, like Adam said earlier.
Yeah, if you follow this line of MTD, then really your salvation is up to you,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's exhausting, and it doesn't work because you're going to find that you cannot do enough good things or avoid not doing enough bad things to save yourself. And so the truth of the gospel is just incredible.
Well, it does nothing for guilt.
Yeah,
nothing for guilt, because there's no true sacrifice. There's no way for you to be able to go, man, this has been forgiven. Because the problem with this line of thinking is, once again, I'm not always good. I'm not always moral. I'm definitely not always nice. So I'm not even able to live up to those standards that are there. And life isn't always going the way I want it to be. So where is the salvation from that? Mm-hmm. And that's where the cross, that's where the garden, that's where the cross come into play. It's like he went through all of that so that we could be able to rest and say, I'm not good. I'm not moral. I'm not nice. Yet God loves me anyway. Mm-hmm. And so that's the great freedom that comes from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you can't always control, but you can always surrender. Loved what you talked about yesterday, Adam, just following God's will is rarely easy, but it is always good. Mm-hmm. And so if we can control our own surrender,
it's really the only thing you have
control
over,
right,
is
whether
you're going to surrender or
whether you surrender or not.
And mm-hmm. whoever you surrender to as your master,
mm-hmm. right,
will enslave you. The problem is everything else is a horrible master and God is a good one. So
yeah, I love that thought. And so you've got this idea where it's like, okay, well, it's really easy, but it's always good.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe let's talk just for a moment. Is there a time that you guys can remember where you've seen that phrase kind of play out in your own life, where God has asked you to do something, say something that was kind of difficult, but ended up being the right thing?
I mean, I think on like a maybe a smaller level. Like I remember us making, and by us, I mean me, because I was the checkbook person, but for us making the decision to actually start tithing.
Yeah.
Wasn't easy. And, you know, especially at the very beginning, it was not easy. It was not easy stuff to like just immediately just like say, okay, 10%, 10%.
Mm-hmm.
But it was good. It was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was not easy. I would say, and I think the three of us could probably agree with this one, it wasn't easy making a decision to pack up all of our belongings, in my case, my kids and my wife as well, and move away from our entire support systems.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't easy.
Yeah.
It's been good. It's been pretty good.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed it, you know? So,
yeah.
Felt like it was God's will for us to move out here. So we did it. It wasn't an easy choice, but it was a good choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wrote the word confession because that's something that, you know, like Jesus going through with this in the garden on a much smaller scale, because I'm not the savior of the universe. But, you know, if I was in those moments where I would need to confess to anyone, whether it was college to a friend or marriage to my wife or anything, I want to pray that prayer. If there's any other way, yet not my will, but yours be done. That's hard. But it's absolutely the best on the other side, because it brings light to what is hidden in secret. And I was just sharing this with a couple last night. When you get things out into the light, it's like exposing black mold, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It grows in the dark. It grows in the dampness. But when you expose it, it dies. It can't grow anymore. And so confession is definitely one of those that is, it's good, but it is really hard every time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I was thinking through that as well. Confession is one of the words to think through just anytime, you know, I've got something that I need to confess to someone. It always comes with a difficult conversation. I thought about the word forgiveness anytime
mm-hmm.
you have to,
yep. mm-hmm.
You know, actually choose to, let go of your grudge and forgive someone for the harm that they have done to you.
Yeah.
That always comes with a difficult conversation, and some tough stuff. But one of the things that I've noticed is that whenever God calls, me or somebody to do something difficult, let's just say to have a difficult conversation, whether it be confession or forgiveness or something else, it usually never ends poorly. whenever it's God calling you to do that, right? So you go into that conversation with humility and with grace, and then usually you walk away with some pretty cool resolution. And so it's not easy, but it is good.
Well, and even if resolution doesn't come,
right,
it's still the right thing. It's still the good thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So just love that, that, you know, beyond the difficult and tough thing that God might be calling you to do is actually good, because he's the creator and sustainer of the universe, and so he knows what's best. So we can find a lot of freedom in surrendering to his will, which is kind of, I don't know if irony is the right word, but that's kind of the irony of the situation, is like we can actually find freedom when we surrender to God and his will. So
yeah.
Love that. Let's talk through this. I want to talk through just some questions. What do you guys think are some practical steps that we can take, you know, today, tomorrow, to help us overcome our desire to control and then surrender to God?
I think,
and you can't say rhythms.
Okay.
Just kidding. You can.
Well, I mean, I do think that plays into it, but yes, where my brain goes is like, first thing you got to do is you got to identify where you're not surrendering.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's just like taking an inventory and just going and just asking yourself that question, what am I trying to control right now that needs to be surrendered? You know, I think, you know, it's easy to slide into the parenting world, and it doesn't matter whether or not you're a parent of little kids or adult kids. It's, are you trying to control your children? And in some ways, whenever they're younger, there are things that's like, okay, we need to help set them on the right path and all those other things, 100%. But then it gets to a place to where, you know, as they become older teenagers, young adults, and those things, there is a letting go. There is a, I can't control them. They're going to make their own choices. They're going to make their own decisions. And really, I guess even saying that out loud, I couldn't control an 8-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can discipline, I can do those things, and I can try to get the outcome I want. But at the end of the day, they're still stubborn little human beings that are going to do what they want to do.
Yep.
And you hope that you're teaching them to choose right, but you really can't control them. You know, you really can't control relationships, because it's another human being involved in it.
Yeah.
And so I think it's just starting off, you just got to say, okay, if I'm going to surrender, then that probably means that I need to identify, what am I actually trying to control right now?
Mm-hmm.
And in every season of our life, it may be a little bit different.
Yeah.
I like that. So I'm going to piggyback on it.
Sure.
You identify it. And then my step is just to say it, you know? And so say it to everybody. So no one talks to yourself as much as you do. So say it to yourself. Say, I cannot control, fill in the blank.
Yeah.
Say it to someone else, you know, a spouse, a friend, someone who's going to help you with it and just who's walking with you. Say it to God in prayer too. Just say it like, God, I, you know, if you are a parent, God, I release to you my kids. I'm doing everything I can to train them, guide them. But I know I cannot control them. I'm entrusting, it's not like they're mine to give back to God. Like they're already his, you know?
Yeah.
But I entrust my trust of them to you. And then we haven't said this in a long time, but the God box we got from, I think, the Groeschel book.
That's Winning the War.
Winning the War in Your Mind, yeah. It's just a physical box you make and write God on it, just as a symbolic way to write something on an index card or something like that and just slide it into the box. And as you do it, you just pray, God, I'm giving this to you, and I know you're going to handle it. And so it's my vow, my promise to let you worry about it, and I'm not going to worry about it anymore. And if I go and choose to get it out of that God box, it's because I think I can handle it better than you.
Yeah.
And so it's just something tangible and physical to go along with the words that you're saying.
God, I think I can control this better than you, so I'm going to get it back out.
Yeah, you seem to be failing at your job. So
So I love that there's some action and some physical release. You actually drop the object into a closed box where you can't see it anymore. And
It's good.
So
I love that idea. Love that too. I think I don't want to step on the toes of where we're about to head with the conversation, but I think another step too is just to actually do the challenge from the sermon yesterday, which is just to pray, you know, yet your will be done. But before we get there, let's talk bottom line, and then we'll add some commentary to the bottom line a little bit more than we usually do. Just loved what you said yesterday. True faith begins between the if and the yet, and you obviously see that with the story of Jesus in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
yet, yet your will be done. Yet your will be done. Yet I want what you want. And so you see Jesus is just in alignment with the will of the Father, even though it's difficult to be. So I want to just to talk through this, just help us like imagine what type of, life, that looks like when we live life between the if and the yet, demonstrating true faith, what might that look like for us?
I really, as far as like nitty gritty kind of stuff, I don't know if what I'm about to say is what you're looking for, Luke.
Sure.
But to me, it really is just getting to that place to where there are all things in our lives that we all have that we would pray, God, if it's possible, you know, God, if it's possible, I want you to get me into this school. God, if it's at all possible, could you get me a new job? Mm-hmm. God, if it's all possible, could you, maybe I don't want a new job. I just need a raise. You know, inflation's real. And so I just need help financially. God, if it's all possible, would you allow us to conceive? If it's at all, and so it's just, we think through these things that we all just desire. And we want God to, and I don't think there's anything wrong at all, anything sinful at all in any of those prayers. Mm-hmm. Just like it's not sinful at all for Jesus to say, hey, if it's at all possible,
yeah,
could we like not do this cross thing?
Right.
He's like, this is crushing me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But where it's got to move is, but yet God, even if you say no to this, I'm still yours. You're still God. I'm still your servant. I'm going to keep moving forward. I want this thing. I want it desperately. And I'm acknowledging that out loud, but here's the yet. Yet, not my will, your will be done. Mm-hmm. And so if you say no to this prayer, then I am 100% going to assume it's because you have all the facts. You know everything the way it needs to be. You have something that in many ways will be better.
Right.
And if not every way, will be better. Mm-hmm. You know, you think about it. Jesus was praying to avoid death, and he did not get saved from death. Mm-hmm. Everybody else in the world was saved from it.
Yeah,
and so God exceeded the request.
Yeah,
he's like, mm-hmm. No, I'm not going to save you from this. I'm going to save everybody else from this. So I think that's for me. It's just like learning to live in that. I'm going to acknowledge. Here's what I want. But yet I truly am going to believe and I truly am going to trust that if you choose to go in a different direction, it's because it's what your will is.
Yeah. I love that. Josh, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, I thought it was funny, Adam, you said, I'm not going to get nitty gritty. And then you actually listed a lot of really practical everyday situations that are kind of nitty gritty. In my mind, at least, yeah. They were very good. And so, something popped into my mind right now. The only thing I'll add to it is just another word that starts with Y is yield. And we've heard it said before, when you pray, one of the ways you can do that is just spell the word pray. And so you praise God and then you repent and then you ask and then Y, you yield.
Yeah.
And that seems to be a pretty good pattern. You start with praising the one who is worthy of all the praise we could ever give,
yeah,
more. And then you repent, and then you ask, but then you yield. Like Adam said, no matter what, we do know that God is sovereign, and he is this God who literally controls everything. Mm-hmm. And if he can control the universe, I've got to believe I'm going to yield to what his sovereignty is choosing for my life. And he has a better plan. So
yeah, I keep coming back to this word in my mind is just freedom. Like, there's so much freedom found in surrendering to God or in yielding to his will or in becoming alignment. Like, you know, if you're praying a prayer like, you know, God, I'm really feeling inflation and would love a raise, you know, could you provide that? But even if you don't, mm-hmm. Your will is better than mine. And I'm going to trust in the truth that you own the land with cattle upon 1,000 hills, mm-hmm. and that you're going to provide and take care of me. If I'm going through a season of grief, God, would you help me to just like, yeah, feel your presence and overcome this? And even if there are times that are more difficult, like I'm going to trust that you are near to those who are brokenhearted and that your will is better than mine. Like in all of our situations, good or bad, in all of the prayers that we pray and all the requests that we make, good or bad, there's so much freedom to be found in the truth of God's care for us. His will is always better than our will. So there's so much freedom.
You want to have a kind of a cheesy illustration, but
yes, of course, always.
Have either one of you learned how to waltz before, like the Bach step?
Nope.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I haven't really
talking about, buddy.
I haven't really either, but my wife has tried to teach me, and from time to time, you know, that's like the only thing I know. But here's what I know. It takes two people to dance, right?
Correct.
It
takes two to tango.
But there's a leader. And traditionally it's the man leading the woman, and if she tries to like resist and push her own way and do her own steps, they're going to look horrible dancing. Yeah. But it's not like the man is like forcing, but he's just leading. That's all he's doing. And right. So it's just a gentle. He's holding her hand in a certain way and the hand on the back in a certain way, and she can tell exactly where his steps are going, because there's like a frontward step and a backward step and left and right. You can do the whole thing, and she doesn't necessarily know where he's going to go with that. And so our relationship with God has been described before just as a dance. Mm-hmm. And so he's a leader, and if we're trying to resist it, the dance is not going to look good. But when we let him lead, it goes well.
Yeah.
And so I know that's cheesy, but that just kind of popped into my mind. So there you go. Take it or leave it.
So let's dance. Challenge from yesterday. Just pray yet. Love that. What are you trying to control that you need to surrender? And just go ahead and, you know, get on your knees, go to your bedside and just pray.
Yet
your will be done. I know what you have in mind is better than what I have in mind. And you'll find some freedom with that. So love this. Want to talk for a little bit just about just one question. And of course, you could answer. We could talk about this for hours, but I'm limiting it to just a couple of minutes. The resurrection was celebrated yesterday at Easter. We talked about that for sure and celebrated, no doubt. But the story that we went to is a little bit different. So I want to give a little bit of time today, just a moment to talk about the resurrection. First thing that pops into your mind, and just really, really briefly, what does the resurrection prove and what does it change?
What does it prove and what does it change?
What does it prove and what does it change?
Okay. Well, it changes the way we can live. And so I think that would be the big thing, is that because the resurrection is true, it means that we've been saved to a new way of living, that the old is gone and the new has come. What does it prove is very simply that Jesus is who he said he was. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the big thing. So for me, those are just the two quick hits on that.
Love it. Love it. Josh,
yeah.
Anything else to add?
Oh, I think it proves God can take the worst and make the best.
Mm-hmm.
It proves that God is in control. proves that, like Adam said, Jesus is who he says he is. That the last enemy to be destroyed was death, and he did it. It changes the way we live, because if we know everything has been vanquished and defeated, then we know our victory is certain. And in this world we do have trouble, like he said earlier, but Jesus has overcome the world. So
yeah.
We're already victorious. We know that. And it changes the way we live. When you know you're gonna win.
It is the source of hope.
Mm-hmm.
100%.
The source of hope, like singular source of hope. It is the thing that matters more than anything else. And so I think devotionally, you know, you just look at that and you just go, okay, so world seems to be going to Hades in a handbasket. You know, you get all kinds of things just going on. There's so much negativity out there. You can find bad news everywhere. You can find good news out there too. But it's just like, seems like things are spin out of control. The one thing that is our anchor point that we get to go back to every single moment of every single day is that tomb is empty.
Mm-hmm.
So since that tomb is empty, then that means victory is coming. It may be taking longer than what we would want, but once again, you know, hey God, if it's at all possible, if you could come back like today, that'd be great. But yet, if you're choosing not to, then we're going to assume that your will is perfect. And and so it's what keeps us anchored to it all. Luke, what would you say about the resurrection?
Yeah, I mean, I'll retweet everything you guys just said. I think the conversations we've been having in the teen room have been about this recently, just with the season of Easter. I actually read a book from Barna recently called The Open Generation. It was some, you know, study about Gen Z and how they relate to Jesus, the Bible, and the world. There was a stat there that I found really, really interesting, intriguing, and a little bit sad. And it was that 44% of Christian teens in the U.S. believe that Jesus really did raise from the dead.
Yeah, I've heard stats like
this. So you take the flip side of that, that would mean 56% of Christian teens in the U.S. either aren't sure that Jesus raised from the dead or don't think that he did. And so after seeing that, I kind of switched up our plan for conversations and just, you know, grabbed the teenagers and it was just like, hey, here's the fact of the resurrection. Yep. Like you would have to have way more faith than I do to believe that Jesus didn't actually come back to life. And so we talked through just like the historical evidence and the, all of the different talking points for Jesus's actual resurrection, and then used that as kind of the point to say, and so because it's true, like you can actually overcome sin and death. And, you know, 2 Corinthians 15:57 or 1 Corinthians 15:57. I don't remember which one.
First.
Like, but thanks be to God who gives us the victory over sin and death. Like it is 100% true. And so you can be 100% free.
Yeah. And that verse, and actually the 58 says, therefore, work enthusiastically for the Lord, because you know that everything you do for him is not in vain.
Yeah.
Everything you do.
Yeah.
So
love that. Well, it's been fun. Happy Monday after Easter. If you hid real eggs in the house, they will probably be stinking now. A couple days before they start to.
The weather hasn't been. It's not too hot.
Let's start hiding the fridge.
Let's end with something fun. We'll do a little bit of Easter and spring fun. And we're going to do this overrated, underrated, perfectly rated game again.
Love it.
What you think? A lot of it is Easter related. Some of it gets into some spring specific things, but a lot of it is. Okay, so you tell me, overrated, underrated, or perfectly rated, Easter egg hunts.
Season of life, man. Right now, they are great.
That is true. That is true.
5-10 years, it'd be overrated.
Okay.
But yeah, season.
Yeah, that's really, really true.
It depends on where you're at.
Yeah, so I'm in the overrated stage now.
Okay.
But Josh is 100% right. Whenever the kids are little, there is something really cool about it.
So there you go. I don't have kids yet. So overrated. Starburst jelly beans.
Overrated.
Ooh, no, I'd say those are probably properly rated. I don't think they're underrated by any stretch.
Yeah,
no,
they're good. I was going to say perfectly rated until Josh said overrated, and now I want to say underrated.
Well, the only reason I said overrated is because you rave about it.
That is my only, like the traditional Easter celebration aside from like Jesus' resurrection. Starburst jelly beans is about the only thing I care about.
I'm like, just not a jelly bean person.
They're so good.
So, yeah.
So, well, that's the thing is jelly beans kind of are their own thing, but Starburst jelly beans, oh, that is delicious. Okay, Peeps.
Overrated.
Yeah, way overrated.
Overrated, yes. Oh,
have you seen this disgusting? There is a Pepsi flavored like Peeps right now. Have you seen this?
Goodness. No, what's crazy is like,
it's almost like somebody did a practical joke.
Yeah.
And it just went out. And they're like, well, let's keep it going.
Yeah. How can we make money?
Yeah. What's crazy is they missed their opportunity. They call it Pepsi flavored with Peeps. It should have just been Peepsy.
I know, right?
I don't know about it.
Right? I mean, like, come on.
If you say, do you want a Peepsy? That sounds...
Yeah. What about the process of dyeing Easter eggs?
Overrated.
Sasha just did this last night with the kids. Literally texted me. The whole counter was stained green, and she said, why do I do this every year? But they had fun. They had a good time.
Sorry. As a kid, I loved it. I think that one's a
That's true. Once again, it's a stage of life thing. If you're a kid, it is the ball.
So this morning, then they all showed me, look at this that I made. It's speckled with purple and yellow, and it was fun. So.
All right.
The things parents do, man.
We love our kids, right? New Easter outfits.
I would say it's probably properly rated. I mean, I'm not wearing anything new that I know of Sunday, but I know that Jen was excited about a new dress that she got and, you know, those things.
Yeah,
so.
I don't think we got anything new this year, actually, and we usually do something. So,
yeah.
But
I promise not to wear a Stone Cold Steve Austin t-shirt. I promise to do that.
We need to find those pictures you mentioned earlier and make you wear some of that stuff.
Don Johnson, baby.
How about Reese's peanut butter eggs? So you've got regular Reese's.
Underrated.
I think they are so good that they're still underrated.
Yeah.
You with me?
The special Reese's eggs or footballs or the other, like, shit. There's more. Okay. It's so good.
I'm not a huge fan of like a peanut butter and chocolate mix. So Reese's aren't my thing. I'm not as passionate about that one as Waffle House. I could be the one that's weird there. Okay. But I hear people all the time who love Reese's say, or Reese's or Reese's or whatever.
I say Reese's.
So I hear people all the time say there's like a regular Reese's peanut butter cup. Mm-hmm. It's like an 8 out of 10, but then the football ones or the Easter ones, like a 10 out of 10 or 11 out of 10. Why?
I think the regular Reese's is 10 out of 10 and the others are
12. Why are those better? It makes no sense to me.
It's the ratio. The peanut butter, there's more peanut butter, there's more sugar. I mean, so the regular Reese's is just like a little thin sliver of the peanut butter. And so these have like, I don't know what, 3 times the amount of peanut butter in there?
It's awesome.
Well, there you go.
But if you have a peanut allergy, you shouldn't eat them.
Yeah, don't eat them.
That's a disclaimer.
Cadbury eggs,
overrated.
Ooh, I like Cadbury eggs.
I remember
I think
Josh.
They're underrated.
I don't recall what they taste like at all, so I can't really speak into it.
I don't know if this was an April Fool's post or not, but somebody put out there that Subway was going to make like a Cadbury egg sandwich.
I didn't see that.
Might be better than some of the things on their current menu. Carrot cake.
Oh, underrated. I love carrot cake.
I cannot remember the last time I had carrot cake.
Oh, man. So. Carrot cake's good.
I think underrated.
It's so good.
It's good.
Do you like it with raisins?
I don't think I've ever had it with raisins.
Bro.
There you go.
Just saying.
Raisins in my carrot cake. Rabbit stew.
What is that?
Rabbit stew?
Rabbit meat?
Stew made with rabbit meat, man.
Never had it. So.
Now, does it have to be with the Easter Bunny? Because I think that he'd be a little gamey.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never had rabbit stew. I can't rate it.
I don't know, me either. I just put it down
rabbit,
because of the bunny
theme. Not just
stew,
but any sort of rabbit. I've never eaten.
All right. Well, there you go. Spring related. The start of the regular season for MLB. We're underway. A few games in.
I have actually been watching a little bit of Royals baseball this year. And so that's been fun. So I'm going to say it's now underrated. It used to be overrated. Mm-hmm. But now I think most people don't care enough about baseball to where it's actually, you can say it's underrated.
Yeah,
I'll go with that. Yeah.
2 years ago, I would have said overrated. Then I married someone who loves baseball. So now I'm saying perfectly rated and go Braves.
As we record, the Braves are what? 5-0, 6-0?
We've lost one.
Oh, you did lose.
Yeah, we lost one. But I think we're just one loss. So looking good so far. The Masters.
Oh, that is, it is so good, it's underrated.
So good it's underrated. I think it's perfectly rated.
I think it's so good.
But everybody knows that it's so good. So I don't know. And of course, Adam has turned it on.
We're at the end of the podcast.
As soon as we got done talking about the Bible, it's like, okay, the Masters are on.
Yeah.
Are you cheering for Tiger to win?
Oh, he ain't going to win.
I don't think he will.
Yeah, he's not going to win, but I'll watch him. He's +1 right now as we are.
+1. All right. I'm wanting Jordan Spieth. I like me some Jordan Spieth. Hook 'em horns.
And
from talking about the Master to watching the Masters.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, so this weekend also, you've got ball golf tournament. This weekend is also a disc golf tournament in Nashville. It's called the Nashville Open. Overrated, perfectly rated, or underrated? I'm saying underrated.
I'm going to say underrated just because I've seen some interviews with those people, and I'll turn it on just to watch the interviews of disc golfers.
Yeah, man. Great. It's fun.
I'll say there is no rating because nobody cares. So there we go.
All right.
He's currently wearing his disc golf hat.
My attire.
Ready to go.
The 2023 NFL draft.
Ooh, it's in Kansas City, so it is going to be properly rated. It's just going to be on point, man.
Cool.
That's coming up a few weeks.
It's at the it's in the end of April, I think.
27th or 26th. We're getting there. 25th. Yeah, it's a few weeks away.
Yeah, a couple weeks. Cool. All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up there. Go watch some of the Masters and have some fun. I guess that's what Adam and I are going to do. Josh is probably going to actually work.
I can work while that's on.
Yeah, I'm going to read while I watch it. But anyways, we are grateful that you tuned in today. Hope that you just are just as excited about the resurrection today as you were yesterday and tomorrow as you were on Sunday as well. We'll be back on Sunday morning with a brand new series, How to Deal with Difficult People.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I'm excited about this one.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So
It's going to be all about my workplace.
Yeah. That youth minister, man. It's a difficult person. Excited for that. So join us on Sunday morning for Barbecue Sunday as well. So come on out to church. Yes, you'll get a barbecue sandwich. And then if you want to make your own barbecue sandwich for the next episode of Corinth in Your Car, you can do that because we'll be back on Monday for Corinth in Your Car. It's always fun. We hope that you have a great week, and we'll see you later. Peace and grace.